You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. It's nice to be back in Studio A, and we're bringing our A game this afternoon. Dave Malinsky, a.k.a. the Professor, will join us straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. We'll talk some NBA basketball and a little Major League Baseball with the Professor. Mike Cardano joins us on the program. We run the gauntlet with Cardano. We get Cardano's baseball picks. He's been pretty hot so far this year. Brian Engblom, NBC and NBC Sports hockey analyst, will join us. Three-time Stanley Cup champion with the Montreal Canadiens and arguably one of the greatest teams ever to play that era, that Montreal Canadiens team. And then he got traded to the Washington Capitals, poor bastard. But now he's on NBC. So everything worked out for him. And he did get the three rings, although ironically enough, his name was only on the Stanley Cup twice because he didn't play enough games. He was a rookie in 77. He was a rookie. Now, the crazy thing about Brian Engblom, his first ever game that he played in the National Hockey League were in the Stanley Cup Finals. How twisted is that? Hey, kid, we're calling you up. Stanley Cup Finals. He didn't get his name on a cup. He got a ring, but he didn't get his name on the cup. Nevertheless, we talk pucks with Brian Engblom. A lot of stuff going on. Of course, the Nashville Predators cashed their ticket to the Stanley Cup Finals. They've been in the league 18 years. Hard to believe they've actually been in the playoffs 10 times. Very successful program that they're running in Nashville. And you look at all these expansion teams. Carolina's won. Tampa's won. Nashville making it right now. San Jose still has never made it. But a lot of the newer school teams in the National Hockey League have done very well. The Ducks have won a cup. But Ducks aren't winning a cup this year. Nashville gets it done. Now they await the winner of Pittsburgh and Ottawa. And it seems inevitable right now at this point in time that the Ottawa Senators are going to bite the bullet, right? You know, the Senators have been down before 3-2 five times in playoff history. They've never come back and won the series before. So they're going to have to do something they haven't done. We'll get Brian Engblom's thoughts on that. But let's start off with the program by giving credit where credit is due. We spend a lot of time ripping the National Football League, man. Seems like every second or third video that I do is bashing the NFL or Roger Goodell. In fact, I think I spend more time ripping the NFL than CNN does ripping Donald Trump. Nah, that's not true. You know, a freaking bomb goes off at an Ariana Grande concert. Not enough. That's just not quite big enough to take CNN away from the Trump bashing. But I digress. But listen, the National Football League, they've given us good reason to rip them. We don't have enough time to go over all the stories and reasons why we bash Goodell and the National Football League. But when they do something right, we've got to give them credit. And they've done something right here, as the NFL has just announced a couple hours ago, actually, that they will now allow excessive touchdown celebrations. As, of course, the NFL, forever known as the No Fun League, still has a long way to go. But it appears as if though the massive ratings drop last year and over the last couple of years, the National Football League ratings trend going downwards clearly has woken Roger Goodell up. Now, listen, he's still stupid and he still thinks marijuana is like heroin and addictive or something like that. But once again, we don't have enough time to discuss all the stupid things that Roger Goodell and the NFL think. But they get it right now. They get it. The ratings are going down. They're going to be cutting some commercials out. They're not going to go to as many commercials during the game in this upcoming season. You know, after the kickoffs and in between and possessions and all that type of stuff, they're just going to stay with the game. And excessive celebrations is something that's going to bring some fun to the game. Now, it's not a free-for-all, all right? It's not an all-out free-for-all. And first things first, there are still some rules, all right? And one of the rules, and I believe it's rule number one, no twerking, which is a good thing. You know, Goodell's on a roll today, man. You know what? Good job, Commissioner. The only people that should be twerking on a football field are the cheerleaders, all right? You know, I love Antonio Brown. I don't want to see him ever hump a goalpost ever again, all right? It's an unnatural act that needs to be banned in all 50 states. Good job, Goodell. No twerking. Unless you're a fine-looking cheerleader, we don't want you shaking anything, all right? No shaking anything. You're not allowed to do the throat slash. You can't point a gun. You know what I mean? It's common sense. It's one of these deals. But you can do the snow angel. You can once again dunk, which I think is going to be the coolest aspect of this. The dunk. Tony Gonzalez started the dunk. And then Jimmy Graham did the dunk. I think now, though, that the dunk is going to be legal again. We're going to see some crazy dunks. Because what can you really do? Now, I don't think NFL coaches are going to like this very much. Because you know these wide receivers, they're going to spend like an hour, man, every day in practice in the end zone. All right, you do this. You go like this. You go like that. And I'm going to be going like this. But remember, there's no sexual gyrating at all. That's what the league said. They said, hey, you guys can do what you want. Don't make it sexual, man. And you know what? Really, don't hump the goalpost. Do we need to tell you this? Like, really, do we need to tell you this? Don't hump the goalpost, please. You know, we got to, like, give, like, extra rules. Do not take out your junk. Do not moon anybody. Do not grab your junk. Do not twerk, all right? Do not thrust. You know what? I'll allow a thrust or two. Touchdown. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's okay. You know, what are you going to get? Some NWO old school stuff going on? Some suck it, Degeneration X and everything else in between? I'm expecting Odell Beckham to be the leader right out of the gate here. Odell Beckham's already, his mind's already spinning. He's got to come up with some cool ass stuff. I'm just looking forward to see guys still get flagged. They're going to be, you got to do what you want. They're still going to end up getting flagged. But hey, the National Football League, there's a lot of things that they have to do, like let Josh freaking Gordon back in the league. All right. Let, you know, ease up on the pills. And, you know, how about letting players blaze a little bit more? You know, we're in 2017 right now, Commissioner. But for a league that's known as the No Fun League, this is a step in the right direction. And I can't wait for the season to freaking begin, man. Bring it on. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. I am Gabriel Morenci. Great show. Mike Cardano, Roto expert, director of the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, will join us in a couple of moments. He's a Mets guy, so we'll bash the Mets a little bit. We'll talk some baseball with Cardano. We'll talk baseball a little bit with Malinsky. We'll talk hockey with a three-time Stanley Cup champion, Brian Engblom. Tampa Bay Lightning analyst Brian Engblom is currently right now as we speak. So let's bring in a professor right now so we can get to as many topics as possible. Dave Malinsky. Dave, always a pleasure. How you doing?
First, let me say that anyone who's willing to come on the air these days as a Mets fan, that's brave.
Yeah, you know what? And he's betting against them, so he's not a dumb Mets fan. He keeps on picking on them. The question is, do we pick on them again? And I don't really see any reason why not to, but look at the Padres, Dave. The Padres. Matt Harvey's got to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, here's what's been happening the last couple of Harvey starts. And so that people can understand from a handicapping perspective, better hitters are learning to not swing at anything but a fastball when Harvey throws it because he just hasn't commanded his breaking pitches at all. So you've seen the rest of the league do that. The problem is, can the Padres do that? They got a lot of guys who haven't seen Harvey. They got a lot of guys who can't hit anyway. But that's what the major leagues are learning now. Sit on Harvey's fastball. If he gets the breaking stuff over, so be it. But just sit on the fastball.
I don't have the heart to, I'm not taking Harvey, and I don't have the heart to bet on San Diego here. It looks like a pass, Dave.
Here's the funny thing, though. As bad as Harvey's been this year, the price point is getting down pretty low.
I know.
opening day, this is $1.65. This is $1.70. Now, how many chances are you going to get? In fact, I see some spots where you could lay $1.30 right now. How many chances are you going to get to lay 30 against the Padres and Chacin on the road? That shows you how far down the markets have dropped Harvey.
Very interesting. So, yeah, we'll get to some baseball in a moment. Golden State Warriors, they cruise into the finals. They're the first team to be 12-0. The Lakers did it a couple of times in the old five-game series formats. Warriors get their 12-0 right now. It's really a shame. Kawhi Leonard gets knocked out And it was a very anticlimactic series. Ultimately, San Antonio weren't beating Golden State anyways. But the San Antonio Spurs have a lot of question marks as they force forward right now, Dave.
They do, because it's going to be a rebuilding process. I mean, where the bittersweet part comes in, and yeah, we bet this stuff every day. We are ruthless capitalists. But is that the last time I'm going to see Manu Ginobili? It was one of my favorite players. And yeah, we are fans out there at times. What the Spurs have to do is a rebuild and decide what pieces they're going to build off of, because Ginobili won't be back. Parker, who knows? LaMarcus Aldridge, at this point, will he ever get healthy enough to be what he used to be? Gasol might not be back. There could be some real sweeping changes with that franchise.
There really could be, and I wonder if Kyle Lowry fits into the mix there, or if LaMarcus Aldridge gets dealt and they completely retool. Yet you don't want to waste Kawhi Leonard. And Kawhi Leonard, one of the top players in the world right now, Dave, you don't want to waste this and rebuild from scratch. They've always retooled. I imagine they find a way of retooling, yet it's going to be a challenge for them.
Yeah, and you've got serviceable pieces off the bench. You know, guys like Dedmon and Mills and some of the others are good role players if that's all they have to be. But you know what? If you start with Kawhi Leonard, that's a good place. But, you know, here's something, Gabe, you and I both talked about this in the West. You know, Clippers have talked about, do we blow it up or do we rebuild? Spurs are going to say, do we blow it up or do we rebuild? If Golden State keeps their roster intact, it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
No one is going to win the West. Again, the reason we say roster intact, Curry and Durant both have opt-outs that are sitting out there, should they decide to test other waters. If this Golden State roster stays intact, no one is winning the West long, long into the future.
So let's talk about tonight's game, the Boston Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Celtics shocked the gaming world on Sunday night, as a 17-1 underdogs that cash on the money line. Yet the Celtics have a lot of question marks moving forward. We'll get to this in a second. But as far as tonight is concerned, the point spread, was kind of whacked. The whole series has been weird. The playoffs have been weird because Golden State and Cleveland have been tattooing people. So we have a 3.5 in game one, Dave. And people are talking about how Boston can play with these guys. They get tattooed two consecutive games at home. So it's kind of strange that the better team is playing game three at home. And we can say that Cleveland took the pedal off the metal going into game three. They were up by 16 at the half. So they clearly just sort of said, wow, this is easy. And they got caught in the second half. There seems to be a big expectation. Ooh, Cleveland are going to come. They're going to be really angry tonight. They're going to come out swinging. Yet the point spread as it is, that's a lot of points, Dave.
The point spread's actually a little bit silly. Because, no, you can take 16, at a couple of properties. Now, that's wrong as long as Cleveland mentally competes. And in the first two games, they took punches. They didn't get up off the mat. Here's what happened in game three, though, Gabe. And I think this is Cleveland losing their focus. Game one in the first half, 18 out of 25 in the paint. Game two in the first half, 13 out of 17 in the paint. Game three in the first half, 4 out of 6 in the paint. Yeah, they came out and they knocked down all those three-point shots early. That led them to lose their focus. Where they won the first two games is smacking Boston in the mouth and attacking the basket. They didn't do that in game three. They took themselves out of rhythm.
And I expect Cleveland to respond. Listen, LeBron James had a bad night. He got into it with a fan after the game. He got into it with the media. He was clearly not happy with his performance. And in fact, 107 straight playoff games, he scored more than 11 points. Pretty crazy, actually. So they're going to be there. But Boston's confidence goes up a little bit right now, doesn't it, Dave? And Boston's playing with house money, so they could be loose coming into this. And they get it done without Isaiah Thomas, which leads me into their question marks. Danny Ainge has been considering trading Isaiah Thomas for a while now. And we're talking about a team. It's very interesting. They're a one seed. Yet at the same point in time, they have the first pick in the draft. They also seem to really want to get Gordon Hayward. which seems to be a good fit. They like every white guy in Boston. And, oh, yeah, Hayward played for Brad Stevens at Butler. So it seems to be a good fit right there. Yet there's not enough room for Markelle Fultz, Gordon Hayward, and Isaiah Thomas. For a team that's in the Eastern Conference Finals right now playing tonight, Dave, they have a lot of decisions to make moving forward.
Well, I'd say one of them that gets to be made much more easily is you saw them without Thomas on Monday. And even though the defensive stats won't look great because Cleveland made all those three-point shots early, if you use points per 100 defense, which is a really good metric, 16.3 fewer points on Monday than they were giving up on average when Thomas was on the court in the series. Most NBA metrics, if you use real plus-minus, rated Thomas as the single worst starting defender in the NBA. If you could deal him for Hayward, boy, you take that if you're Boston, you take that in a heartbeat. I'm not sure Utah would. But if you could bring Hayward in, deal Thomas out, then use that number one pick and bring the kid from Washington in, then you've got something that you can build around a little. But I think they come prepared to play tonight because there's just more physical grit on the court when Thomas isn't there. They're a tougher team when Marcus Smart is getting more of the minutes.
Very interesting. A lot of points. And as far as the total is concerned, I like the over, Dave. I expect the Cavaliers to be more proficient this evening. Boston's confidence is a little bit up. 217.5 right now. What's your take on the total?
I don't like the over. In fact, I may bet under here because here was what got sort of hidden in the mix from Sunday night. There were only 92.6 possessions. In the first game without Isaiah Thomas playing, that was dead slow.
Yeah.
But it was high scoring because they were 34 out of 79 on three-pointers. I don't think that tempo changes. I think this is a bit of a physical grinder. That's what Boston wants it to be. So I think the tempo is slow, and they may not match the Game 3 shooting.
You know what I think, Dave? I think it's going to be a sweat job with the total. And I think it'll be one of these sweat jobs either way. You'll be hoping, like, because, yeah, the games that have gone over the number in this series, they've barely gotten there, Dave.
Yeah, they have. And what you also face, too, in terms of over, is you're sitting there with a 15.5, 16-point favorite. Ordinarily, one of the equations, when the favorite's that high, not much is happening the last 2 minutes of the game. You're getting some dribble outs at the end. So it was close on Sunday, so you did have an end-game scramble. If this game's sitting near the point spread, good luck getting points the last 2 minutes.
Dave Malinsky with us. All right, Dave, Major League Baseball. Take a look at the standings right now. And I remember when I used to cover baseball and be around players and managers all the time, around this time of the year, I'd always ask them, when are you what you are? The old Bill Parcells, are you what your record says you are? And I don't know if you are what your record says you are after May in baseball, but I think it's you are what your batting average says you are. I think if you're a pitcher, I think that we have a good formation. At least players do. And I know general managers think the same thing. You know, after May, you know, because by July, they've got to start thinking about dealing with the All-Star break coming up. But it's amazing, Dave. We're nearly 2 months in right now. And you look at the Major League Baseball standings, four of the six divisions right now are sort of upside down and would be deemed surprises. Nobody expected the Yankees to be this good. People wondered about their pitching and wondered about the young guys. Nobody expected the Twins to be in first place at this juncture of the year. Okay, Houston, people like Houston, but not to be this good. Nationals taking advantage of a crappy division. Milwaukee Brewers, one of the biggest surprises, the fact Cubs still struggling. And then you got the Rockies and the D-backs at the top of the West, which leads me into the baseball's hottest team right now. The Brewers, they've won 7 of 10 and 10 of their last 13. What do you make of this, Dave? Is it still too early for you to say this is real with all these weird-looking standings, or are you buying in?
No, because let's use the 40-40 rule. When teams get past 40 games and when starting pitchers get past 40 innings, the stuff starts to matter. And guess what? This is 40-40 time now. Milwaukee doing a lot of little things right, but of course the big thing, no one envisioned Eric Thames doing what he's done. That has been the big wild card in their equation. Can they maintain this pace? Probably not quite what it's been, because we're going to see some regression in him. Over time, the league is going to learn how to pitch to him, which they didn't know up to this point. But here's the thing, Gabe. You wake up with that bounce in your step when you're in first place, and baseball is such a mental game where confidence means so much. So, yeah, Milwaukee will hang out there for a while. Eventually the Cubs will catch them because the talent's simply better, but they're going to stay there for a while.
And, you know, we got a red-hot team, Dave. Minus 110 tonight. Hard not to like the Brew Crew. We got Jimmy Nelson on the hill against Biagini.
Yeah, because here's your issue with Toronto. Maybe they are what they are.
Yeah.
You know, at this stage. Joey Bats will hit better than he's been hitting, but will he get back to who he once was? Unlikely to be that way. Nelson has a little bit of upside. There's just been this issue with consistency that he can't quite get that one nudge over the top. But you know what can help a pitcher with that? When the rest of the team's confident. When they're playing better defense, when you get a little more trust in the bullpen behind you. So I think Milwaukee is in a fair price range tonight.
Yeah, and you look at Jimmy Nelson, you're right, he was struggling with consistency, but his last 15 innings, opponents only hitting .193, so he's starting to put it together. We got 1 minute, Dave. Twins and Orioles talking about surprises. Twins are a surprise. Erwin Santana's in a zone right now. Hitters have a league low, .44 batting average against them in his 6 wins. He only allowed 2 runs and 42 innings of work. And as you wrote very eloquently in your column today, Dave, he's not blowing anybody away. We're talking about a confident guy that's just throwing his pitches, let the defense do his thing. He doesn't worry about if the ball's going to get hit. You know, he's just, there's nothing spectacular about it, but he's just, you know, he's throwing the baseball well right now.
He may also be getting away with murder. And I think that's going to be the big issue for Santana because in so many key categories, his strikeout ratio is actually down this year. His walk ratio is up. His ground balls are down. His swinging strike percentage is down. He's actually pitching worse than last year. But baseball's been awfully – and baseball can do this in short cycles. There's so much geometry out there. I think if you own Santana in a fantasy league, this is a sell time. He is likely maxed out what he has. Time to sell.
You got Dylan Bundy. He's been great, but he got blasted in his last start. Orioles 3-7 in their last 10.
Yeah, I think Bundy's upside is going to show. His control has been better than ever this year, so that shows he's got a little more confidence behind him. I liked Baltimore this morning. Of course, when you look at the way the lines move, so did just about everybody else, so it's trickling up. But I believe from a betting standpoint and from a fantasy standpoint, Santana has already reached his peak.
Dave Malinsky, pregame.com. Read his column. It's right there on the front page. It's called Point Blank. Always a pleasure, Dave.
Hey, good luck, everybody.
There's Dave Malinsky with his great stuff. As always, Brian Engblom joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Camera 2, Drew's a little bit down today. Normally, he's a pretty chirpy dude. He's kind of down. He blames Jonathan Bernier. Bernier didn't get hurt, Gabe. Bernier didn't get hurt. He's like, congrats on your Preds. Hey, they're not my Preds. I'm just pulling for PK Subban. Unlike the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens right now, he's probably not pulling for PK Subban. But we'll get to that. Let's bring in a man that knows the Montreal market very well. Three-time Stanley Cup champion, longtime hockey analyst, and now does Tampa Bay Lightning games. Brian Engblom joins us. Brian, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing? Hello? Hey, Brian.
Hello. There we go.
Yeah, there we go. We got you. Brian, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Gabe. How are you?
Hey, always a pleasure, man. Always a pleasure, yeah. I was just saying, you know the Montreal market very well, and they never forget anything in Montreal. They remember the trades forever. So the PK Subban trade, and it's nothing against Shea Weber. Shea Weber's a great player, but nevertheless, a lot of people in Montreal have taken notice that PK Subban's going to the Stanley Cup Finals, Brian.
Yeah, well, when you make a big trade like that, it doesn't, it stays in people's minds everywhere, all around the league, but particularly in Montreal, when he's one of the most popular players to come along in a very long time to ever play for the Canadiens, it makes a big difference, there's no doubt. And when you have circumstances like this where PK's going to the finals now and Montreal has been out for a couple of weeks already, then, you know, it's going to make a lasting impact. Trades are always interesting, especially when they involve high-level players. And it takes a long time to really look and see, you know, who won the deal.
Yeah.
The most popular guys, obviously, are the ones you focus on. And, boy, the controversy just doesn't go away on this one, does it?
No, I know. But Weber's a little bit older, and he's under contract for a while. So I could just see it. If PK somehow gets a cup victory and is flying around for the next 6-7 years and Weber starts breaking down, then the pendulum swings. But you're right. It's like the draft. You can't judge right away. It takes a couple of years. One thing that we can judge right now, it's amazing. Peter Laviolette's success, Brian, in the National Hockey League, only the fourth guy in the history of the NHL to go to a Stanley Cup as a head coach with three different teams. Unbelievable feat to accomplish.
Yeah, and some of the announcers were talking about Laviolette's ability to really get his troops, involved and handle the day-to-day, period-to-period, and game-to-game situation. And that obviously is a very important thing. For a head coach being, mostly psychologist in many ways is a big part of today's game. I think even more than in the past. You have to be able to handle the personalities. Yeah, you have to help, motivate the players and get them ready to play and make adjustments as you go along. That's a lot of stuff to handle. And Laviolette is one of the tops in his game right now in his ability to do that. So you have to give him an awful lot of credit for that because of where they are. And it's interesting to hear, players and former players talk about his abilities to do that. And he continues to do it now, and they're on their way to the Cup final.
I've said it a million times, and I sincerely believe it, that the Stanley Cup is the hardest championship and trophy to win in professional sports. It's a war of attrition. And we've seen the injuries mount with every team that's still left playing right now. But being around the Tampa Bay Lightning, you've seen the importance of the center position right now. You lose Fisher, you lose Johansson. At what point does this catch up to them? It's been next man up all the time, but they're without their two best centermen going into the Stanley Cup Finals now.
Yes. You have to really hand it to Laviolette and his players, obviously, who adapted. The performance that Sissons put on yesterday with the three goals and all the other stuff that he did besides scoring the goals, really quite remarkable. Normally, when you lose high-quality center icemen and your top two guys are out of it for whether it's one game or more, to be able to survive through that is really something. And to be able to finish off a series without your number one center like that, it's really tremendous stuff. I think it shows the ability of today's players in today's NHL and how even everything is, and how many good players there really are.
Yeah.
Team play and X's and O's can make up for some of it. But, in the long run, the playoffs are more about will than they are skill. And I think that is the most telling factor right now. And I'm not saying that Anaheim didn't have it. I mean, Anaheim dominated long stretches of that game yesterday, last night. They had the puck all the time. The shots don't lie. I mean, they had the puck and they did a lot of things. They couldn't beat Pekka often enough. And then obviously when there was a chance against them, the scoring went against them. So good on Nashville for taking advantage of their situations. And I think they could, it looked like they could kind of smell it, on Anaheim. Anaheim had a lot of pressure on them, and that's the way it is. And Nashville was really good, I think, at sensing that. Even when they, when Anaheim came back and tied the game up, and it seemed like the pressure should be tilting towards Nashville, I didn't get that feeling just watching on television.
Yeah.
And Nashville was able to come back and score and put it right back on the Anaheim Ducks, and I think in the long run, that's what made the biggest difference.
I always tell you, Brian, I grew up in Montreal watching you, right? I want to make you feel old, but I'm old too, so don't feel bad, right? But So Larry Robinson, Guy Lapointe, Rod Langway, Brian Engblom, you guys were great, man. There's Hall of Famers there, but even you guys didn't have the skill of these Nashville Predators defensemen. It's unbelievable. We can talk about, yeah, they're missing guys up front. I've never seen anything like it. I almost say it's like a basketball team where they've got a bunch of guys that can just hit threes at any time and get you, because literally any one of their defensemen, they sort of play like forwards. They're not traditional defensemen. They're sound in their own end, but when they're in the offensive end, they play like forwards.
Well, yeah, they've definitely proven that. Particularly their top four guys really are the ones that dominate the puck possession and the offensive play. But I think it's a strategy and a style of play that they obviously decided on at the beginning of the year. And that was with Laviolette getting together with David Poile, the GM, and saying, this is the way we have to go. And that's the essence of the P.K. Subban-Shea Weber trade. P.K. Subban, I believe, was the one who called it a personality trade. And I think that was true in many ways, especially from the Montreal side. They wanted to play a certain style, and P.K. obviously was clashing with the management, the coach, wherever you want to draw that line. It almost doesn't matter anymore. But on the other side, Nashville decided they wanted to play a certain way. Laviolette's always been pretty aggressive. You look at who coaches his defensemen. Phil Housley,
yeah,
one of the highest scoring defensemen of all time.
Yeah.
And so they made the trade not because Shea Weber's not a great player, but because they wanted to be even more aggressive, and they saw the league going that way. And what's everybody talking about right now? And everybody wants to copy the two teams, especially the Stanley Cup winner every year, if you can. Everybody wants to make changes. Well, the way the game is going, it's about trying to activate your defenseman as much as you can. And that's been talked about over the last few years, but the epitome of it right now is the Nashville Predators. Nobody is doing it more consistently or better than they are. So you can see a consistent swing towards that as much as every team can coming up next year and in the years to come.
I've been really pulling for the Ottawa Senators just because, yeah, they're the underdog, and they're the underdog even in Canada, man. And Canadians normally jump on the bandwagon to support any Canadian team that's still playing. Yet they didn't. They didn't with the Ottawa Senators. The Senators, they've shown a ton of resiliency. Their back's against the wall right now. Looks like they're just running out of gas. I didn't think it was Marc-Andre Fleury's fault. But, you know, it's not Marc-Andre Fleury's fault that Malkin and Crosby weren't scored, and Murray comes in and they score 7 goals. Hey, Murray's played well for them, though, so the switch is hurt. Looks like Pittsburgh's got a little momentum right now. Do you think Ottawa can send this to 7 games?
Anything is possible based on what I've seen in the playoffs this year, and even going back to last year, anything is possible. They are a very resilient team. Ottawa has been the biggest surprise to me. To be honest with you, I didn't think they were even a playoff team through much of the year. And so look where they are right now with still a chance to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. Their resiliency is one of the gigantic factors in that department. So, yeah, they're going to have to play a near-perfect game, and they have proven that they can do that. Their ability to hang in there and play the style that they play some days where they're, you know, hanging back in the neutral zone and playing that counter game, that's been around for, you know, for a while now. But it's really hard to do. And I think it was so impressive in that one game where they just swamped Pittsburgh, especially their D-man. It seemed like they caught them in that game of, well, the Pittsburgh D and the whole team was thinking, how are we going to get through the neutral zone? These guys keep hanging back. And in the first period, what was it, 4-0? They just came out and did exactly the opposite. They get all over them, and the Pittsburgh defense could not handle it. So they've shown them different looks and different ways to do it, and that's the most important thing in the playoffs. If you're going to go all the way, you cannot play just one way all the time.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
There's too much tape. There's too much adjustment. There's too much good coaching and too much skill on the other teams. They make adjustments. You have to be able to change things up and show a different look in order to be effective long-term. Ottawa has proven they can do that, and they're going to have to find a way to get it done again in this game tonight.
I would expect them to be more responsible tonight because Boucher was talking about that, you know, that they, because of the victory, they got out, they looked so good, and then they thought, all right, you know what, we can skate with the Penguins. And Boucher, he goes, we're not as skilled as these guys. They kicked our ass. We're not doing this. We got to get back to who we were. But it doesn't mean you want to play in a shell either, right?
Exactly. You know, the classic line the coaches always use is, you know, we don't want to play on our heels. And you have to be leaning into the game. Now, you can lean into it and still be playing a tight game in the neutral zone, which is what they've done most of the time. Whether you call it the trap or 1-3-1 or whatever you want to call it, it doesn't really matter. It's there. It's obvious. We've all seen it. So, but you still have to be playing a very aggressive style in that area and be able to jump and turn a defense into offense. That's what it's all about. So they are certainly capable of that. Guy Boucher is a very good coach. He has proven that. And it's going to be really interesting to see exactly what kind of flavor this game has from start to finish. The start of the game is going to be really important in this one for Ottawa.
Yeah, I hate saying that too, Brian. I always say that. First goal is going to be real important in this one. And I guess it never is. The 2-0 leads don't seem to mean a darn thing anymore. But
true.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think the early pace here, get the crowd into it in Ottawa, and Ottawa's confidence will build. We got to get out of here, but I always enjoy talking hockey with you, Brian. Thanks for the time, man.
Thanks very much. Take care. Enjoy.
There's Brian Engblom with us. Mike Cardano joins us next. Thanks to Brian Engblom for joining us on the program. Great stuff talking pucks with Brian. All right, let's bring in Mike Cardano right now, director of the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You can hear me and the Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 o'clock Eastern time. Mike Cardano is a regular listener to the program and enjoyed a segment that we did the other night. We were talking about professional poker player Mike Norrie. And these poker players in Vegas, they're always betting each other crazy stuff. Like, these guys bet like $100,000 on golf, and oh, I can hit this putt. They bet on everything, these guys. So they came up with a bet. They bet $200,000, all right? They bet $200,000, and Mike Norrie said that he could eat $1,000 worth of McDonald's food in a 36-hour time frame. So, of course, we broke this down on the radio show on Friday night. We went over the rules. Drinks didn't count, so you couldn't get milkshakes or sodas or anything like that. It had to be hot food. You were allowed a salad or two, but up to $200. So there were different limits. You were allowed desserts as well. So we broke it down, and we said it's going to be tough. Maybe it could be done, but it's going to be tough. The son of a bitch, Mike, he tapped out after $95 spent, 10 hours, $95, and he said he felt violently ill. He couldn't continue.
Well, I think we all would have. You know, that was a great segment. The first thing I did, though, after the segment is I called the sales staff. I thought maybe we had a new sponsor. We spent about a half hour at McDonald's.
Oh, McDonald's. Yeah, I know. I feel bad. So Muscle Maker Grill, good people.
He should have went with the Maple Dijon Buttermilk Crispy Chicken Sandwich.
Ooh, how much is that?
I don't know. I think it's like $11 if you run it up, you know, get a couple of
those. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, these guys are dumb. Like, they were eating stuff. Me and Cam talked about it. First off, you get the most expensive things, and then on top of it, you just specify. I don't care what it costs. I want extra everything. You know what I mean?
Was there a limit on salads, on the price?
Yeah, it was $200 worth of salad.
The only way you would have a chance to do it, if you went ahead and downed it with a, chased it with a barium enema.
No, I was thinking,
do it that way and then, you know, keep it going.
How much is an apple pie? $2. I was thinking, come on, Mike, you can plow through like 50 apple pies. That's 100. But no, it can't be done. Like, we broke it down. Sounds easy, $1,000. But even Cam, when we broke down, because we said, yeah, like, remember what it was, you know, they had to eat 125 orders of large fries, Mike.
Listen, if you get to the point where Cam says it can't be done, it's then law, it can't be done.
Even Cam was like, no, you can't do that. Yeah. We were like, all right, let's say you spent $500 on fries. Even at $4 for a large fries, that's 125. So think, you'd have to eat 60 large fries in an 18-hour frame and then go and do it over again. Can't be done, Mike.
Can't be done.
That's it's too much grease. Too much.
Can't be.
Even Warman, who's built like Eric Wood, the center on the Bills, Warman, $95, pretty weak, though, huh? Look at me.
It is pretty weak because, you know, I haven't been there in a while. Last time I went with my three kids, it cost $45.
And you're not even trying.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Oh, come on, man. I used to drop $18, $20 at McDonald's all the time at 3 in the morning when I lived across
like
the street.
He called it quits long before the 36 hours was over.
Dude, you get a chocolate sundae, and you tell them, extra chocolate syrup. They ding you for an extra 50 cents. You just tell them, keep going. I want four extra. Like, I'm a little bit pissed. I think I could do $500, but not $1,000.
No. Can't be done.
Yeah, Warman says doable, $500. Warman, I think you might be able to, like, the thing is, how about for the fact, though, that if you know you're getting $200,000, Warman, it changes everything, right, Mike?
Like,
if I know for $200K, I'm not tapping out. I'm vomiting. I don't care. If you have to force feed me, like, you know what? Waterboard me like a terrorist. I'll say what? Tie me up, Cam. Tie me up and stuff it down my mouth for $200K, man.
The only way to do it is to take an enema, I'm telling you, and just keep it flowing.
All right, so we got Matt Harvey on Hill tonight. Me and Malinsky talked about this. Thing with Harvey is they're not swinging anymore. They're waiting. They're not swinging.
Oh, they're waiting for the fastball.
Yeah, they're not swinging. They're waiting for the fastball. They're like, throw your cute stuff. We're not biting anymore, and he's getting hit because of it.
Yeah, you know, my thing tonight with him, and I'm going to play him tonight, is how many chances really are you going to get to lay 30 against Chacin and the Padres on the road?
That's what
I mean,
Dave
said. When is that going to happen?
That's what Dave said. And I tell you, Matt Harvey better win tonight, man, because he's going to get ripped hard if he doesn't beat.
So. Yeah. I'm hearing he's got a new girlfriend, so maybe he's in good spirits tonight. He'll end up with a happy ending after the game. We're good.
This guy's got more girlfriends than wins.
Yeah, well, you know. Patriots win again.
Yeah, I know. All right. As long as he doesn't make his own Aston Martin sports car like that douche Brady. All right. Major League Baseball scoring up. Strike zone shrinking. Totals are up. How about this? So the Major League Baseball runs per game average in 2014 was 8.14 runs a game. So far this year, it's 9.16. Last night not included. This is with last night included. Totals are now 387, 309, and 28 to the over. That's over 55%, Mike. Over the last 9 days, 74, 39, and 5 to the over. The weather's going to start to warm up. The pitching's only going to get worse with more call-ups. And we're on pace right now to hit more home runs than ever in the history of baseball. Is the ball juiced? Matt Modica says, yeah, they've wired the ball tightly. What do you think?
Gabe, you know, it's not juiced. Here's the thing. You know, in 2009, Questech was replaced by that, I think it's called the zone evaluation system. Now, that grades the call on every single pitch that's either not put in play or fouled off. And it uses high-speed cameras to do that. And these umpires are graded on in every game, and they receive their grades after, and it's made a difference. Every single umpire, even the worst one, has shown incremental improvement since 2009. As bad as the umpiring is, it's better than it was. They chart this stuff.
No, I think the umpiring is good in baseball. I think when it's bad, it's just personal and the guy's being a deliberate dick to the other team.
But my point is that the players can be very, very selective now. And they're taking pitchers where they wouldn't because the umpire is like, I can't call that a strike.
And you're right. And how about this with the fly ball ratio? 2009, 9.4 fly balls went over the fence.
Yeah, well, you weren't having Aaron Judge.
2017, 12.8. But I'm thinking about this. You and I are in the same age group, Mike. Remember the old days, man? Ozzie Smith. They were skinny ball players and stuff, right? They were little guys. Nowadays, everyone's got huge forearms. Everybody's ripped. Dudes are bigger and stronger. And look, now, from 2009, 9.4 fly balls went over the fence. 2017, 12.8.
Gabe, consider this. Just in the last couple of years, Kauffman Stadium, Comerica Park, Petco Park, and Citi Field twice bringing the fences in. Yeah. If they're not reaching the fences, they're just bringing them in until they go over. So that's what they think people want to see. So they're going to create the environment. They're going to shrink the strike zone. And they're going to bring in the fences so that the balls go over the fence. That's what they want to see. So that's what you got.
All right. So speaking of which, the Rockies keep on crushing the ball. They put up an 8 spot last night. Colorado Rockies have gone over 6 of their last 8 games. And Zach Efin's on the hill tonight. And I think a lot of Philly fans probably say Efin, because he gets lit up. Mike, 5 of his 6 starts have gone over the number this year. It's almost too easy and too obvious to like the over in this game.
It is, but to me, it's one of those things where it's over until it's not anymore. It just is. They're firing on all cylinders. They're playing at home. I don't see how you could play the under.
I know. All right, who else, Steve? Do you like anything else? We got 30 seconds.
I like the over with the Sox in Arizona. Over 11. Over 11.
Over 11, all right. You were with us last week, but a couple of weeks ago, your picks have been solid. Every 2 weeks, Mike, you've been stepping up with some solid picks, so let's keep it going.
All right.
All right, see you later, Mike.
All right, take care.
Don't eat too much McDonald's. No, we'll come back with our plays of the day. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. Let's start off with the Boston Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers. We all know what happened on Sunday night. The Boston Celtics, one of the biggest upsets in NBA playoff history. It actually was, depending on the number that you got. But nevertheless, a lot of people are buying in that the Cavaliers are just going to come back and freaking smoke them tonight because they're going to be in a bad mood. The Cavaliers might be in a bad mood, but the point spread's out of whack, man. I don't know what to do with this game. They might smoke them, but I don't want to lay the points. I'm going to go with the over here. I know it's going to be a sweat job, but I think we can get there. Just barely and squeeze it. Squeeze it. Just like your grandmother used to make the orange juice in the morning, like Ted Teevan style. All right, NHL hockey. This isn't good either. The Ottawa Senators, they've been down 3-2 before. 5 times in franchise history, they've never come back to win the series before. And in fact, they've only sent in 7 games. 2 times out of the 5, make it 3. This has been a resilient team. I think they can dig down deep and find a way to win this hockey game tonight before losing in 7 at Pittsburgh, most likely. Colorado Rockies playing great baseball. I'll lay 40 cents against the Phillies. Washington Nationals. I don't like betting on the Nationals, but they win more than they lose. This is a very winnable game for them tonight. We got the Angels and the Rays. Shoemaker's actually 7-0 against the Rays in his career. So gave me the Rays. And finally, in closing, Blue Jays are struggling. The Brewers are not. Brewers are hot. Biagini on the hill. Give me the Brew Crew. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.